Oh. iHeartRadio, baby. The broken-tailed dog himself, Josh Accardo. Hey, Barry, you know I can actually play that on harmonica. You know that?
You can?
Oh, yeah, dude.
I thought this was you.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
Not?
That is. I think it's Mick, but... But I put my 2 cents in. I could play it. If they ever need me to play it, I could play it. Welcome aboard, everybody. Welcome aboard. I'm also referring to the legend, the radio legend in his own right, Barry the Funk, Barry Funkhauser. What's up, Barry?
Hey, hello?
Yes, he's saying hello.
Yeah. All right.
I'm such a radio man that I refer to him even though he's not close to his mic because
yeah.
That's how much I love him.
All right.
He's a champion of a man.
Thank you.
I have a really great guest. I have someone that not only goes back to my childhood growing up, little Joshy in my baby times, but also an amazing actor and performer, an improv performer from Sons of Anarchy, the one and only Christopher Douglas Reed. Say hello, my bro.
Hello, my bro.
So I am New York-based, as some of you know already, because I've been on the channel a few times, and you might follow my other radio endeavors and whatnot. So you know I'm New York-based, but every now and again when I get into L.A., Barry and I link up to make something very special for your ears. And today is no slouch, and I have you in, Chris, because not only do I love you like a brother, but you and I have done tons of work together, and I thought, why not have my boy in?
Oh, man, it is an outright privilege.
And an honor?
I shot low for a reason. But I am certainly happy to see you. It's been too long.
Yeah. I don't get much excitement at a Chris, but I'll take that. It's about as excited as he gets for me when I come around.
It's about true.
So here's a little context for the listeners. Chris and I are from a little community in San Diego called Claremont.
CLMT.
That's right. And if you have listened to like a Slightly Stupid or a lot of these bands that come from San Diego... that's the kind of vibe Claremont has, would you say, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's pretty accurate.
Yeah, just dirtbag.
Just a dirtbag vibe.
Yeah. I'm fun-loving dirtbags.
Fun-loving dirtbags. Yeah, yeah. A little low-lifey.
Like, you'll invite them in your house.
That you know them, you hang out with them.
Yes.
They're your neighbors, they're your friends.
Yeah.
No, that's a great way to put it, actually. It's funny, because I was always looking for a way to describe Claremont, and that's probably the perfect way, like... Dirt baggy.
Yeah, like the friendly dirt bag.
Would you call Claremont, because there's different parts of Claremont, would you call it lower middle class or middle class? There's some parts I think that are actually middle class.
Well, let's paint the context
for
those who aren't there. It's kind of sandwiched between a couple of places that are different than it, so we can contrast there. So you got University City to the north.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's a higher class.
Higher class.
Yeah. So there, I would put them at upper middle class.
Upper middle class. Yeah.
And to like the west north, you have La Jolla, which is like upper class.
Yes, very upper class.
Right. And then you have PB, which is also middle class.
Yeah.
So I
beach
think,
community, but
yeah.
It's probably skyrocketing more to the upper middle now. Would you say?
My in-laws live in PB.
Okay.
So it's upper middle.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
It's upper middle. So compared to all those lovely places,
yeah.
Claremont doesn't look all that great.
No,
but in
no.
reality, I think it's middle class.
So Claremont, I've noticed over the course of 15 to 18 years, crystal meth got pretty prevalent in North Claremont. Is that still the case? I mean, I'm only home every now and again, so I know you probably have a little bit more ties to it. And the only reason why I bring it up is because it does paint, I want to paint a good picture on where we come from before we jump into this bad boy.
Indeed. I think it's not as bad as it was for a while. You know, when the financial crisis hit, I think there was a bigger meth problem than there is now. Now I think it's heroin. I think it's just like everywhere else.
Really? So now heroin is made a...
Yeah, it's just what it is.
It's here to stay, heroin.
Yeah.
It ain't going nowhere. Oxycodone, heroin ain't going anywhere.
Indeed.
So I call it lower. I feel like I grew up in the lower middle class part because I remember, I mean, we weren't poverty stricken by any means, but I just remember stuff that you would only, it's not quite the ghetto, but it's pretty damn close. Like the I remember my buddy in Tecolote Canyon, there was a hobo we knew in the canyon. Like, it was just stuff like that, where just little things where, like, some guy might try to, you know, steal something out of your backyard. Like, it was all, a lot of petty crime happened.
I had a BB gun stolen out of my room.
Weird stuff like that. It's a lot of it's petty, not too much violent. There was the Claremont serial killer. Which was near my house.
That's what, in the 80s?
Yeah, the mid to late 80s.
Yeah.
As I talk about it more, it might be more the lower middle class.
Yeah, I would say it's lower middle class. I think that's a good place for that dart to go.
So, Chris and I come from lower middle class background. Long story short, we are two dirtbags that have done okay.
You guys were on Merrimack, right? Or Appleton?
No. We lived, I shared, my brother and I, because Chris is the same age as my little brother, we shared, all five of us shared a room off of Mount Harris Drive where my grandmother lived, and then we moved to a place called a street called Thornwood, which is not too far from there, which is by Mesa College.
Got it.
We moved up from the lower to like the mid to lower. we moved up a hair when we moved to Thornwood, but yeah, it was still dirtbag central. Yeah.
And you're lucky you survived Thornwood, just because like that area in those streets, there, if you get lost, like pre-smartphone,
you could
die.
You're literally in somebody's backyard for the rest of your life.
It's a maze.
you have to make a home. So what I love about our story is that I played sports. Chris played Little League with my brother. You were what now? 6'6"? You're about 6'6", right?
I'm 6'6".
You're 6'6". And you're weighing in. You're a big dude.
More than you.
More than me.
Yes.
And Chris was a big kid as well. And used to hit these monster home runs in Little League. I remember, like, that's how you were known. You were this big kid. And then as puberty hit, you don't play sports after that, right?
I played football.
You did? Oh, you played football. That's right. Okay.
I played JV while you were a senior when I was a freshman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you played JV, and did you end up playing varsity as well?
I played varsity 1 year. I took the junior year off because my knees and head and just laziness.
That must be a thing, though, right? Because your knees must kill you on a regular basis.
They've gotten better since I don't use them as much as I used to. That's the thing with my knees, is like whenever I was working hard and running a bunch, they gave me issues.
So the reason why I bring it up is because you got into the arts very early on, like drama, and later on improv. We'll talk about that. But I think it's important to start there, because you'll recognize Chris from Sons of Anarchy. You play Filthy Phil. He also had a great little part in Eastbound and Down, which was awesome. That's one of my favorite ones you've ever done. And you've done a number of other things as well, but those are the two that just popped in my head, the most prominent. And we both come from the same neighborhood, and we both got into entertainment, which it's kind of rare from where we come from. I mean, a lot of people that I know from back there, they don't really, they kind of stay, right?
Yeah, yeah, I have seen a lot of folks stay around, and I don't know if it's, because we went to Madison High School, which had a really great theater department.
Yeah.
And there are a few other high schools, you know, around that did not.
Yeah.
You know, Claremont didn't, UC didn't, so we were kind of an exception.
It was pretty good. I remember wanting to be a part of that, but just the sports, you know, it took over for me. So I think that's what I always thought about you, is that you were a massive individual. I mean, you're big, like an offensive tackle for the NFL big. I mean, you have that kind of size, and you know, sports was a big part of your childhood. And then for you to kind of go, I'm going to do drama, was it more you wanted to have a hobby, or what made you love drama?
Oh, you know, I knew I wanted to take a drama class going into high school.
What was your influence? Like, what kind of stuff did you, when you were growing up, that you were like, oh, I'd love to do that? What got you into the arts?
Being an attention-loving idiot, I guess.
Well, yeah, that's always the first reason.
I think that's just what it boils down to for me. And I had seen a couple plays in middle school that made me fascinated by acting.
Any one in particular that we can...
Yeah, you know, one of the ones that I remember very clearly was a play called, it was Pancho Villa.
Oh, Pancho Villa, is that
It was some. It was like Letters to Pontchavir or something like that. It was a Young Playwrights of California production that was done at the Old Globe Playhouse.
Old Globe, which is a, you know, it's funny because I had another
Old Globe Theater. Excuse me.
Yeah, I had another friend in here who's actually got San Diego roots, and we were talking about the culture in San Diego, how it kind of lacks, but people forget that the La Jolla Playhouse, this is different than what you're talking about, but the La Jolla Playhouse, a lot of well-known Broadway shows, yeah, that's where they're birthed.
And the Old Globe Theater.
And the Old Globe Theater,
yeah,
as well.
They're two national powerhouses.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would, matter of fact, I will say on the record that they are better than anything in Los Angeles.
They do put out great,
yeah,
products.
While we're starting the Los Angeles-San Diego, yeah, rivalry. Yeah, I'll go ahead on the record and say that our theaters are better.
I think it's I think it's safe to say that those are like a kind of a hidden gem. I mean, if you're not in the entertainment industry, you don't know about those.
Yeah.
So you're saying you were in eighth grade, you saw a play there.
Yeah,
I saw Letters of Pancho Villa.
It was written by a middle schooler or a high school student.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's
you related.
I related, yeah, and it was very captivating. And there was this large Mexican actor who just like took over the stage and commanded it and just, mm-hmm, you know, moved the entire audience the whole time. And it was fantastic.
Because when you're a bigger guy, you know, the parts you're up for a lot, I'm sure you're not trying to do Othello. People aren't, you're usually like a biker guy or a doorman. I mean, a door guy or something crazy, like something physical, I would assume, because you're imposing.
Suitcase pimp?
Yeah, so, yes.
As it were?
Yes, that's right. Like, Chris is in my web series, Dating on Set, and he plays this really funny part called Suitcase Pimp, and he's awesome in it, so make sure you check it out. But when you see that, and you see a bigger guy acting, so right from the giddy up, you have influence like that, because you're watching something, and you go, I really want to do something like that, and you're seeing a bigger actor going, oh, this guy's doing it, I can do it, you know?
I don't know if all that went through the head, but it was definitely just like
the seeds were planted.
Yeah, it was something that excited me, and school didn't excite me. Sports excited me,
yeah,
but school certainly never excited me. I mean, think one of my report cards that year when I saw that play was a 0.26 grade average.
How do you? I think if you're breathing, you could get a.
You could get a 0.3. Breathing enough. I should have had you tutor me.
How do you get a 0.26?
I think it's six F's and a D. I'm not positive
so
on the math.
But you're going to school every day.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was going. it's not doing homework. I had a very, like, a 10-year protest where I did not do homework to protest the nomination of Betsy DeVos to the post of Secretary of Education.
So you're not doing homework now?
No, I'm still not doing homework until she is done.
He is 30 years old, but did you go to college?
I did. I went to community college for theater.
For theater?
Yeah.
And that's where you studied theater?
They actually wouldn't let me go to any other rooms. Like, they would escort me to the theater and off of campus to make sure I didn't, you know, spoil.
I don't know if you're a candidate for any kind of schooling if with a 0.26. I've never even heard of that score before for a guy who went to school every day.
It takes some dedication.
That is, you should get an award for that.
I agree.
Okay. So, when you are deciding what you're going to do with your life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because when you choose entertainment...
And you've done this too.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. When you choose entertainment, that's something you figure out early, because it's not one of those things where you can just jump into when you're 35 and start doing. You have to start right away. It's one of those things where I think you know when you know and you're going to go for it, and it's usually at an early age. You're in the community... college, you know, theater class. What's the next move, though? That's the thing. What's the next move? What do you do? You're in San Diego.
Yeah.
You're not in a position where you're in a market where they have a bunch of acting gigs rolling around. You definitely have to move to LA, and you're a San Diego dude. You're San Diego born and bred.
Well, you know, that is one of the benefits to specifically coming from San Diego, is you have that theater scene. So coming out of, you know, theater school and college, I'm seeing plays once in a while, going to auditions for smaller theaters in San, mm-hmm, Diego. And eventually, I always knew I wanted to act, but there's no path.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, there's no...
No, there's no one
no
tells
manual.
You this is what you do to be an actor.
And a lot of people do, but it's not always right.
Yeah.
And it's not always accessible to you.
Mm-hmm.
And mailing agents your photo and non-existent resume doesn't work for everybody,
no,
especially
it doesn't.
If you look like me.
Yeah. But doesn't it, did it ever serve your advantage to look like you? And also, you know, part B of that question, do you ever feel like, or did you ever feel insecure about the way you looked? I mean, just from the fact that you had, you know, you're a heavier guy, you're a bigger guy, like, does that come into play and really affect your confidence?
Probably. It didn't until I went to my first day of school ever. And then
so the first time you had to be around others.
Yeah, the first time I had to be around other little humans was when that ended.
Yeah.
I think that's good training for entertainment.
Sure.
And yes, to answer the initial question, I think it has helped me at times for mm-hmm. sure. There's just not a lot of people who are my package. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's that.
I always think Chris is really high all the time.
I am not high right now.
I know he's not right now, but every time I talk to Chris, I think, oh, he probably ate a whole thing of cannabis. And that's not a heavy joke. That's just a weed joke. That's because how much he loves weed.
I do like weed a lot, and I didn't until I was older. So
I think it's one of those things. I actually enjoy partaking now, and I didn't so much when I was younger. But I digress.
I think the statute of limitations of the first person to try to sell me weed was your brother.
Well, hey, that I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
that guy probably has been the first for a lot of people when it comes to that kind of sales.
Yeah, it was fun.
I have quite the family tree, as I said, with dirtbags, Claremont dirtbags. So you say that it did make you a little insecure when you were growing up, your size, but as you're trying to get in the mix, you're sending your headshot out. You're not getting many calls back because you have no resume and you're still sitting in San Diego. When does it click? Like, I gotta move. Because the reason why I ask is because, you know, you are San Diego. You're like me in a way where you're attached to the city, the sports teams. You're a San Diegan.
Well, yeah, and I was very reluctant to move. I didn't move to Los Angeles until after a year and a half of being on Suns. No, I didn't. I auditioned driving from San Diego to Los Angeles.
Okay, this is really interesting. So you literally found a way to get your headshot in the mix with someone that submitted you for Sons of Anarchy.
Well, what happened was I did a professional play and did that with you know, this really talented cast and a cast member's friend, or no, it was the director's friend, excuse me, was at an after party and mentioned that I did great and that I got a great look and that I should talk to his agent. And that's how I got an agent.
And you got an agent off of that.
And that's how I got, you know, my picture to Sons of Anarchy.
So still in San Diego, this guy who's based in L.A., this agent says, yeah, I'll take it. I'll take a shot on this guy. He has a cool look. I could probably find him a gig. He submits you for Sons. And Sons had been on at that point how many seasons?
Sons had been on, it was shooting its third season.
Were you a fan before you got the audition?
No
I didn't see.
No.
I didn't watch it until you were on it.
Because
I was like, oh, my buddy's on this. I gotta watch it. When you first saw the show, when you found out that you were going to get the call back, right? Because, I mean, once you get that call, for those of you that are actors, you know this. When you get a call back, especially if it's a show that people know, because I knew I heard of it, so you obviously probably heard of it.
Yeah. I'd had a friend do like stand-in work on it even.
Yeah, so you had some connection.
Familiar.
And you get that callback, you're pumped, I'm assuming, right? Because that's your first big callback, isn't it?
No. I had been auditioning for like a year and a half. I had come close to like three movies.
Really? What movies, can you say?
One of them was Smoke and Aces 2. There are a couple others that I got called back, and then I met with the Coen brothers about True Grit.
You probably were like, please God.
Because
that's, when you say the Coen brothers, that brings a certain level of artistry, a certain level of respect. It's like the upper echelon of directing.
Yeah, they're in the top five of people making films today. So, of course, yeah.
And it was a decent, meaty part for you, or just
enough? For at the time.
Yeah.
It was great. It was a great part. Just any movie, like being on set one of their movies.
For that,
was
especially
great.
For that cast. I mean, it's a remake, a John Wayne remake.
Yeah, I go into my callback and Jeff Bridges is in full Rooster Cogburn get up.
Really?
Yeah.
He was in full dress.
Yeah, they were doing like test photos and stuff.
Uh huh. And you saw that.
I saw that.
Like, see, that's a little thing like Dirtbag from Claremont. You see, now you're close to Hollywood a little bit, and it looks like your dreams might come true. It's like a sliver away from might being a thing.
Yeah.
That's probably the most painful part. It's not getting anything as much as it is being like that moment where you go, I was in that room. You know, I've had those moments where you go, man, I was like reading with this guy I really look up to as far as, you know, his craft goes, and I was almost there. I can taste it.
Yeah.
So you're getting that from the Coen brothers. You're thinking, oh, and I'm talking with them. This could be a thing.
Yeah.
And then you don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And do you break something?
No.
Do you go into the Hulk mode?
No, there's this with movies.
Smoke
at least,
a bowl?
I wasn't even smoking at the
wow.
time.
Wow.
Well, no, I was. No, I wasn't.
He can't even remember when he started smoking. He smoked so much.
I mean, like, every day. Like, I don't think I was smoking every day back then.
So you were a hobbyist then. Now you're an enthusiast.
Yeah, now I'm a practitioner.
We're going to talk about that, too. I cannot wait. So you get this callback for Sons of Anarchy. Do you watch it? Do you catch up on the show just to kind of see what the temperament is and all?
I wanted to watch an episode. I didn't get the callback directly. I got the audition. The audition was for my... was on my anniversary. So
of
like
wedding. Your wedding. Yeah. You're married.
Yeah, so we like that had plans and I had to cancel those because it's the Sons of Anarchy audition.
Yeah.
And it was only for a one episode guest star.
For the same character, Filthy
no,
Bill?
No, different character. Head okay. Redneck.
Which
aptly named.
If you look on when you look up Chris, that'll be funny.
You're going to see the casting director, Wendy O'Brien, was doing her job amazingly as always. But I went up there for the first audition. I did it. I was driving back. I was somewhere.
Do you remember the lines? Did you feel like you nailed it? Do you feel like you did something good in there?
Yeah,
you did.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I felt really dialed in.
Yeah.
I had coached for it with my acting coach, Eric Beck.
Mm-hmm.
And it had gone really well.
And you knew it when you left the room. You're like,
oh, yeah.
That was
and
good.
Plus, the casting director for that one was like the nicest casting director
I had met.
That
always helps, right? When you go in there and they're supportive.
So energizing.
They give you some feedback.
Yeah, and she was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I was driving home feeling really good about it, figuring I was probably going to have to drive up tomorrow or the next day for a callback. And my agent called and said, you got to go now.
So you're on your way back to San Diego.
In Orange County. And then I turn around to drive to North Hollywood. And this is back before cell phones, so I'm like, where is it? He's like, it's on Sherman Way.
Yeah, so you can't even Google map it.
Nope, I just drove up the 405 till I found Sherman Way, then drove all the way across the valley. And
What did he tell you? Did he say you read so well they need to see you now for the same thing, or he just said you got to go back?
No, he just said they're bringing you back this afternoon.
Oh, man.
You go do it.
Are you pumped? Are you nervous at that point now?
I feel like I always get a little nervous in auditions.
Does success make you nervous? Or I know for me, the possibility of being successful when it's close can make me nervous sometimes because I'm so used to not getting anything.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're only in the game at that point for a year and a half, so you're not totally jaded
yet.
No,
the expectations are pretty limited at this point.
Yeah.
And I had just gotten cast in another play at the La Jolla Playhouse.
So you feel like you're on fire. It's natural to have people like you at this point.
I felt good.
Yeah.
Like I'm
confident.
In a play in a couple months. Things are good.
Yeah.
And then I went in and read for Head Redneck again, started to leave, was walking back to my car, and the casting associate ran out.
Mm-hmm.
And brought more sides. I was like, we want you to read this one.
Uh-huh.
So that's when I read Filthy Phil.
Filthy Phil.
Yeah.
And that's a character that stayed on the show for, what, 3 seasons?
Yeah.
And it was regular work for 3 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to sit at the table. And I think it's, you know.
Exactly like I'm sitting now.
Yeah, it looks like we actually brought the table in for Chris so he could film more at home. The SOA skull table. I think what is staggering as an actor and as a performer is being kind of a part of a show that is a phenomenon like that was. It's like I compare it to probably some of those guys that ended up being on Sopranos for long periods and having being not background, but they had speaking parts, but it wasn't like a huge part. When you're on that show and you're on the show, you're part of the crew. But you don't have really any storylines that revolve around you. You're just a part of storylines. Do you ever say to yourself, man, do you ever get a little, not greedy, but once it kind of wears off that you're on this hit show, you know, by the second season that you're on it, third season, you're like, oh, I really hope they give me something to jump into. Did you even see that opportunity?
I read every episode hoping I was going to be as much a part of it
of course.
as I possibly could.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, like, I was a dirtbag from Claremont, and I'm all of a sudden on a set with, you know, Katie Sagal.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, television royalty. And then I look to the other way, and there's Ron Perlman. And,
yeah,
you know, he's a movie star. And you quickly, like, you fall into place.
Sure.
Like, I felt like it was pretty easy for me to just go there and do my work.
Because you're on a show where the lead, you know, Charlie Hunnam, he gets ultra famous from it. Like, he is, that role makes him very, very visible and very famous. It must be kind of surreal to be within that close of proximity with someone that's kind of going through this newfound fame, I would think.
What was really crazy regarding Charlie is the dude had to carry a show.
Yeah.
You know, he had to carry this very heavy, very dark drama.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in 2/3 to 3/4 of it every week. And seeing the burden that lies on the number one of a hit show was sobering.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot.
I've talked to people on Sopranos, not to keep beating it in. It's, to me, it's the greatest show of all time. But they say very similar things about what Gandolfini had to do. When you're in, like you said, 2/3 of the whole episode, where basically the camera's on you for the majority of the episode, and you're learning. I mean, I don't know what your guys' shooting schedule was, but I think their shooting schedule was every week. I mean, he would finish scenes and then have to learn the scenes for the next show the following week, like literally just start over again to learn lines.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that was the same setup for you guys.
That's every night with somebody in that position.
Yeah.
Because you film 5 to 8 pages a day, depending on the shooting schedule and the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in 6 pages and you're the lead, you've got 6 pages of line to memorize.
Yeah.
And not only memorize, but know
technique.
Every beat of the scene and how it's going to correspond to the scene that you're going to shoot tomorrow that took place actually before the scene that you're shooting tonight. You know?
It sounds like it's like an overwhelming burden, it sounds like. I mean, obviously the riches are great and, you know, all that stuff and having a great show and you're the centerpiece of it is great, but the work involved, overwhelming.
Yeah. I can't imagine.
Were those shoots fun?
Yeah. Motorcycles and guns, man. Every once in a while, they acted like they were porn stars around. It was fun.
It's funny because when we were shooting the web series, because it's based off of a character that you know that works in the adult film industry, you're around a lot of porn stars there too. So it sounds like you've led a decent career so far that.
I'm like a magnet, baby.
You're a lady magnet.
How it is.
He's a porn star lady magnet.
Yes.
Very much like Barry, our producer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he knows everybody. He knows all the ladies. I am a peon amongst these magnet for ladies
giants.
In front of me. Dating giants, you and Barry.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Known for looks. Known for your looks and your prowess.
And
it's very, very hard to be in this room with these
lightning-like charisma.
You do this thing, and I'm going to let you talk about it because I'm going to totally butcher it, but...
Mm-mm.
We follow each other on social media because we're cool like that.
Indeed.
And sometimes I see you put out stuff where you're doing, I don't know if it's, is it shows for cannabis? Like you, like a farmer's market? Tell me what you do. How do you even get into it?
Well, on Instagram is where I post all my weed-related stuff because that's just kind of organically where that part
and
of
Chris
me
is really into
exhibited.
Weed. You're really into it. I remember we were hanging out after shooting the web series, and you were telling me about the strands of weed you had in your pocket, and you were like the dude. You're like a professor of weed.
That's kind
of
everybody out here, though.
That's true,
in
right?
It's like in California, that's just kind of how it is. It's almost like a language that you speak. You know, always smoking on, yo. I hope it's fire. Oh, yeah, this is gas.
Isn't that great?
Gas.
That's your inner monologue, like, oh, what we smoking on, yo? What do we be smoking on, yo? It's me, Christopher Douglas Reed.
See, that's the show.
That's going to be your. Yeah. That's going to be our sitcom.
It's just that's the culture, and the culture is strange, and like I love it. It's just there's so many characters, and there's a lot of really soulful, generous people in it that reminds me of home a little bit more.
Yeah.
I think more so than the entertainment industry.
Yeah, because you know that's what's great, because you don't really strike me as Mr. Hollywood, and that's kind of what I love about you, is that even though you've had a couple of things go for you, you're never like, I need to be with my squad, or me and Bay just watching TV and hanging out, or I'm in the green room, or I mean, you're never like that. You're never putting on airs. Like you're a decent dude. So why don't you relate to the Hollywood life? Because I mean, when you're on Sons, I'm assuming you got invited to a ton of stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah, and I go to them. Like,
of course,
it just comes down to, I think, like, I mean, just not being that good socially. Like, it's one of my cons.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so you're not great.
My Madden rating for socially would be like around 55 or so.
If that's not a guy who smokes a lot of weed, that he literally busted out an analogy, his Madden rating for his personality.
I would love to see it. I think we should all, like, at one point in our lives, just have somebody break down who we are on Madden.
Are you socially awkward? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think so.
What is it? You just don't like talking to people?
I like talking to people. I just have a weird head, and I think silly, absurd things,
yeah.
And I don't know. Like, I feel like I get along in the real world. It's just, I don't know. I don't know why I don't do the Hollywood thing so well.
Yeah, because you don't, you almost had a moment just now, huh? You thought about the weird stuff going on in your head, and you're like, man, I really have a lot of problems. And it almost came out here on the show.
Yeah, I'm sitting in Dr. Laura's chair, so like,
I hear a psychopath.
Yeah, like something's coming up within me.
You got married young, so does that kind of attest to the fact that socially you match with someone and you're like, all right, that's it, I gotta lock it in?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in that.
Right?
I mean, my wife's just awesome, and we've always gotten along great.
Yeah.
And
how long have you been married?
That's how it is. I've been married for 8 years.
I just got married.
You just got
married?
Just
got married.
Oh,
it
my
is,
word.
Congratulations. Thank you. It's great. But her, it's great, but she's definitely more ballsy now. Like, she's not different, per se.
She's got
but
the contract.
That's what I mean. Yeah. I can see in her eyes when she talks to me that it's sealed. And it bothers me that she knows it's sealed. Like, I almost want to pack a bag and just keep it in the closet by the door.
Yeah.
Just so whenever she acts up, I could pull it out.
Just, like, put in a box with it just says, when she goes over the line, and just like put it in the closet.
Did you notice that about your wife? When, I mean, maybe it's because I've always been hard to wrangle in, and for me to propose with such a momentous thing, especially for us, that I was committing like that, that it makes her have this look of, that's right, that is right, yeah. I got you.
She
and
has the look of a champion.
It is a look of a champ. It's the look of Tom Brady when he's marching down the field, poised in the final minutes.
Oh my
that's
word.
The way she looks at me.
No, that's
it's
not
brutal,
bad.
Dude.
That's all right.
It's brutal. Yeah. I feel like my Trump hand, I'm not making a political joke, I'm saying I have no Trump card anymore. I have no strong hand. It's just me now, as I'm like every guy I've ever known in
maybe
my life.
Maybe one day you will. Like, maybe you'll like one day learn to like make a really great mac and cheese, and like she'll love it so much
that I'll own her then.
Yeah,
that she can't leave me.
She can't leave you.
Yeah, I don't like being in the submissive position. I'm not necessarily there, but it feels like that because of I can't leave.
You're
it's
worried,
now legal.
You're becoming a beta. Or
what's legal?
Whatever. Yeah, you're a cuck.
I'm not necessarily a cuck.
is that what it is? That's just the words I'm seeing.
I'm not a cuckold. I'm not inviting men over to slam my wife.
I don't think it means that anymore. I think it just means not being
a
complete prick anymore. If you're not a complete asshole,
okay,
you're
I'm
a cuck.
Cuck.
Yeah. You're not a complete, like,
those are the only
arrogant
choices we got. Maybe that's part of your social awkwardness. How do you classify yourself? Well, one day I'm a cuck, and the next day I'm a complete prick.
Yeah. It's good to have different spices in the cabinet.
Do you, being married, has that, being in L.A., has that made you, socially not have to deal with people then?
Yes.
Because you don't have to go out and date?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
It's fantastic.
Your wife wears so many hats for you.
She's just amazing.
Great.
She's a blessing, man. Like, I've known her since, you know, I was a dipshit sport boat cook.
What's
you know,
a sport?
Going to school. That's cooking on a sport fishing boat.
You used to cook on a fishing boat?
Oh, dude, I used to run fishing boats. I've done everything on a fishing boat.
Do you puke?
I've puked, yeah, absolutely.
That's a real thing, right?
Yeah, the ocean sucks.
I went to Venice a couple years ago, and they put me in one of those boats to take me through Venice, but they put me in the bottom deck.
You mean Italy?
Italy, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sorry,
good.
Not Venice. Valid point. Venice, Italy. And Venezia, if you want to get
there, we go.
Real about it.
And I
could only see, I couldn't see land because you're in the lower part of the boat.
Yeah.
I almost threw up all over all these Italians.
It's a compliment in their culture,
it's
actually
brutal, dude.
Yeah.
How do you cook on a boat like that?
That's a tough gig. I'm glad I don't do it anymore.
And you're a huge dude. You're 6'6". Yeah. How? Where are they putting you on the boat?
I fit in lots of places. I mean, you'd be surprised.
It's like a popple, you just fold yourself
into
a ball.
I'm like an octopus. Just like one little tentacle at a time, I get in there.
Under the giant?
I'm not a bulldozer. I'm a refrigerator.
You're huge,
you can put
dude.
A refrigerator in.
You're not a refrigerator.
All right, I'm a tall refrigerator.
Okay,
like,
fine.
Yeah, like a big one.
You're a high-end Samsung that creates cubes and water.
Ooh. Yeah.
I love throwing analogies at you and watching you process them. It's the cannabis in your bloodstream. I feel it breaking down every analogy. So you're cooking on this boat and you're flipping halibuts and you have a girl who likes you and you're out there flipping halibuts.
Yeah.
And she's like, I really love this halibut flipper. And then you guys get married and now you're an actor.
Yeah. I got cast in a play right as we were getting married. So like
she's like, oh, it's go time.
Yeah, it was just kind of strange. Like, the marriage started and the career started almost the same time.
So you got sons and then you get some heat, right? Because then you get Eastbound and Down. Mm. Like, people start wanting to use you because they're seeing you in something. Isn't that, like, you have some heat going at that point.
I don't know if that's, I don't know if that's the case. I feel like my heat was generated by just getting into casting rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know how much my son's work was really, really visible throughout the casting director community. There's certain lots of folks in the town who watch it,
mm-hmm.
but there was only a few situations where I felt like it helped. Like, it definitely helped with Bones and Raising Hope. It directly led to it. You know, I was in a Sons of Anarchy cut on that one.
Mm-hmm.
So, but like those ones for sure. But Big Bang Theory, I just was what they were looking for.
How many episodes did you do of that
show?
Just one.
But it was a good one.
Yeah.
And it was a really good part. But I was exactly what they were looking for. Like, you see, sometimes you see the casting director just kind of light up.
Because they know, like, I got him.
Yeah, I got him.
Isn't that funny? See, you're a trained actor, but it sounds like a lot of this stuff that you're telling me, your bigger breaks, aren't necessarily based off the fact that you can act. It's in conjunction with your look.
Definitely. Like, they're big pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah.
And
how does that make you feel? How'd that make you feel? Like, you're like, well, I'm getting work, so it doesn't matter, and I know I'm going to do a good job.
Well, I've turned down anything that was too, like, egregious, you know, fat guy covered in barbecue sauce hitting on a girl in a bikini.
So you've made a conscious effort to turn those things down just to not be...
Yeah, just to not...
put in that box all the time.
Yeah, it's base, you know?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I don't need to do that. That's not good for anybody.
Mm-hmm. So you're doing, you get the Raising Hope and you get the Bone Sting directly from Sons, but then some other stuff, you just got it because you were perfect for the role.
Yeah.
So now you have this strong reel you're putting together. You're in all these major shows. I love your thing in Eastbound and Down. You're in the final season, right?
Yeah.
Your character was in charge of trying to beat up another character. It's so hilarious. Yeah. You have some great scenes with Danny McBride. Love it. So you have this stuff, and now you're like, what next? So now you're sitting with your agents, and now there's a conversation to be had about a career now. You're actually having conversations about your career. And you're like, okay, how do we capitalize? What was the game plan for
you? I kind of wish there was a meeting like that, but it was...
Because there should have been, right?
I don't know. I think I kind of am what I am, and it's going to happen how it happens. Like, I don't know if there's too much strategy involved with a guy like me. Like,
really?
I'm not going to be endorsing anything anytime soon.
So you're saying that you're not obsessed with, like, a lot of people now about the my brand. Who am I as a brand, yeah. right? That's not really your style. And you don't create a ton of content on your own. So you're looking for just flat out jobs. Do you think that kind of limits you, though?
Yes,
it
for
does,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm very much like I came up. My education is you audition and you call back and you do it.
Mm-hmm.
I never learned to write. I never learned to develop. And like YouTube wasn't around when I was in school. It wasn't part of who I was growing up. Mm-hmm. And I, like a lot of, I think, older millennials, which is what we are.
Yeah.
It's tough to transition.
There's definitely a learning curve.
Yeah.
Even though we are millennials, it's a learning curve for sure.
Yes. Like when we were in school, like when we were in elementary school, computers were Apple IIe's at best.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they were green and like had little dots all over the place.
And now you're competing against people that have spent the better part of their not only pubescent years, but adulthood with access to all of the tools that are now.
Yeah, they learn iMovie when they're 13
yeah,
years old.
Yeah.
Like it becomes part of their vocabulary.
It's a daily thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's part of the tools. And I don't have that, and I really try. My computer education stopped at like 7th grade. So
That 0.26 will do that.
Yeah, there it is.
There is the link. Where that's the road that I took.
So, okay. So you have this show, you have these things going on, and you never think, well, what am I going to do? Because you're so, you know, lack of a better term, old school about it. You're thinking, well, I have agents, that's their job. I have something to offer now because that you can go, hey, my client is from these shows, and they'll figure out the next move.
Yeah, and I'm kind of hoping that, you know, the people that I'm working with, you know, remember me.
The networking and they hire you.
Yeah, I just kind of hope that happens organically. And I think it does. You know, I look at this as a 20-year deal, man.
Mm-hmm. In like, what sense, 20-year deal?
Like,
I know what you're saying, but I just, to the audience, as far as like.
Like, I need to be an actor for the next 20 years. So I have to stay in the game and roll the dice as many times as I can, because if you want to be an actor for 20 years, you have to keep at it.
Yeah.
So that's what I look.
What did you come up with that number, 20 years? Because some people have like a 5-year plan.
Because when I started acting, I was about 25.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of the people I admire incredibly didn't find their real break
until their 40s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's the way your mind computes what your path will be.
Yeah, I guess it's how I build up, you know, the stupidity to keep doing this.
So when I talk to somebody that got something big, right? I'm always like, how many more years did that add to the career? Because sometimes I think about it, I've been doing stand-up for years now, and sometimes I'm like, well, if I don't get something next year, I might have to think about going this, but it never occurs that way because I'll always get something to go, oh, I'm encouraged to keep going. When you get a show like Sons, are you disappointed? You know, because Sons has been done now, what, 2 years? 2 or 3 years?
Two and change.
Your part specifically has been done for about 4 years,
three.
Right? 3 years.
Yeah.
Are you like, okay, what's the next big, what are we going to do next? What do we do? I don't feel like you. I feel like you're a pretty present guy. I am not. I am absurd. I am like, well, what do I do now? Why am I not getting anything? What is happening? Like, I am a nut job. So I don't know how I would live if I had a little bit of success like you had, and no one was like, I didn't have any endeavor that I was already pursuing.
Well, that's the daily thing. It sucks to wake up and not have anything to do that day.
Yeah,
and not have, you know, the industry to work on something specific.
Mm-hmm.
And I get into that a lot. That's a battle. For
yeah.
sure. But in the meantime, you know, when I was in college, I took my first improv class at Groundlings.
Mm-hmm.
I drove up 6 weeks and took their basic class and loved it and did really well at it. But lived in San Diego and couldn't continue.
Yeah.
As part of being in Sons, I live in L.A., have time to do it, and I'm very far in their program now.
Yeah.
So, like, I've been able to do a lot of things I've wanted to do since I was a teenager. It's just, you know, finding the validation in that.
Sure. So when you get that steady paycheck, because now we've jumped into the artist mind, we've jumped into the insecurity of the artist, we've jumped into how it feels to have success. Let's jump into the financial part now, which is a part that none of us ever expect to happen because we're used to not making any money at all. Now you're on this show. Now you're making a steady paycheck for essentially 3 years, right? Three seasons.
Yeah, just about.
Yeah, so you have stability. And I'm sure at some point in that time frame, you even fool yourself thinking, I'm employed. I'm employed. I'm going to be employed. I'm always going to have an option to be employed, maybe for a second.
I wouldn't use the always word. The always word's pretty big for actors.
But it would creep in. Like, you were like, I have an opportunity to be employed.
Yeah. I think especially the last, let's just look where I am, the last season of Sons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been a part of the show for 3 years. It seems like they're satisfied with my performance. I get along with everybody pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, arbitrary things happen with other actors, with storylines, with everything.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're off the show.
Yeah.
And there is definitely a drop, like, you know, the ground comes out from under you a little bit.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's hubris and just not realizing it could happen at any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I know I wasn't ever lost in the dream of I'm always going to be working.
Yeah, yeah. Because a lot of people that I've seen in the industry that are on those shows that are huge like that, where people do get killed off, which that's kind of the formula nowadays anyways with good TV, is characters that you, they build you up to really love them. So when they are killed off, it's a big hit for the audience. And they need those kind of characters that aren't the lead characters to do that. That's just what the purpose you serve sometimes, right, on the show. They have something going on already because they're on the show. When you were on Sons, I know you did a couple stints on other shows, very short ones. The plan, I'm assuming, that your team put together for you was like, hey, we got to figure out how to get you into something more permanent, or is that not even possible because of the fact that you're shooting Sons?
I think they're – because I was on Sons, here's how it works, and it's kind of a sweet and sour position to be in, because you are working – and mm-hmm. you go to work next week. But I never had a contract on Sons dictating how many episodes I was going to be in.
Really?
I was a day player, in essence.
Even though you were on it for 3 years.
Yeah, and that's kind of the reality of television now. Outside the regulars and special recurring guest stars, most folks don't. Like, most of the actors on Walking Dead outside the regulars have no clue what's going to happen
when
next week to the other. No.
How do they classify? So I remember you got a title card, didn't you? Your name is in the upfront credits, but that doesn't constitute you as a regular.
No. Series regulars on Sons were the ones that had like their own title card with their own little picture.
Okay,
and, like,
okay.
And their series regulars are usually anywhere from the top 6 to 15 dozen actors that make up the strength of the cast, like the hall of the cast.
And you're more decoration in ways and help move storylines along at certain points. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you're a day player, even
recurring
day player, even though you're working
all
the
time.
Yeah,
there's no contract. There's no guarantee that I'm going to go. So I could take work on other things, but on SOA, that was very strongly
frowned upon. So even though you need to make money and set up your future, and they could kill you off at any day.
Any day.
They're saying, hey, if you're on this show, we don't suggest you go out and find other gigs.
And I have been in audition rooms with casting directors who will look at it and say, well, you're on Sons. And I'll be like, yeah, I am. I'm recurring. They'll ask. But they had asked, but did you tell them you're coming back? And I say, yeah. And they won't let me audition. Because it's just part of how it operates,
Doesn't that seem kind of ass backwards? That, I mean, you're a starving artist, and you finally got some money coming in, and now the because you got to strike while the iron's hot. I mean, we were just talking before we came on air, and you were saying, you know, like you were, it's hard. It's a daily struggle to not have something to do every day as a performer, and also now because your pocket is attached to it, you know, like so. I find that to be brutal because in stand-up they do a similar thing, and I don't know if it's still this way in L.A., but it used to be where if you played like one club, because they're all so close in proximity, if you play one club, they won't use you at other ones.
Yeah.
Because they wanted different guys, their own guys.
Yeah.
Which, if you're a comic in L.A., you're not. You need that money. You need that $50 spot or whatever it is. You need it.
Yeah.
You need the money. But they're saying, nah, we can't do that.
Everybody looks to serve their own interests.
Sure.
And that's understood. And I'm not, like, I'm just not in demand at the top 10, top 15 of a show.
Yeah.
Not yet, at least.
Yeah.
So they're able to do so. Like, it's all about leverage.
It is,
baby.
It is what it is. And you don't have the leverage. You got to eat garbage, you know, sometimes.
That's an exaggeration. Well, but
the world, see, you're an optimistic guy. I'm not. I'm pessimistic. I feel like I get motivated after the reality of the world shoveling feces in my mouth and me having to fight through it. I mean, that's just my reality. It's something that keeps me waking up in the morning. It's like, who's going to shovel feces in my mouth today so I can make this list and add them to it? So when I do make it, when I become a Christopher Douglas Reed from Sons of Anarchy, I'm going to be reading people the Riot Act.
That's the Claremont accent, by
that's
the way,
right.
Folks.
That's right. I just brought that dirt bag back for you. So you know, it's really cracking up in here.
And I get that motivation. I guess... and I certainly do. One thing that got me going in acting is I lost a dear friend who was very talented, and he was one of the people that I looked at in school as he was going to make it. Like, he was funny. He was naturally charismatic. He had the looks. Like, he had the package to be a working actor. And then he left us too soon. And that hit me really hard. That got me... thinking that I was always one of those ones that I thought could make it. And if you don't take advantage of your gifts, then you're not leading the life you're supposed to.
Well said. I agree. When you get not to necessarily harp on it, but I'm trying to get the emotional part of it now and do a full circle here. When you get something and you're realizing, no one can take away the fact that I was on a hit show for a little bit, but now I want more. Did that hit you? The taste of this is real, but it's not fully where it should be. Like, do you ever think about 3 years ago and get depressed about, damn, man, I was in the mix and I need to get back somehow because you had the taste?
Yeah, because you don't expect, well, at least you shouldn't, for all you young actors there, you shouldn't expect to ever play a part for a year. I mean, that's kind of absurd. Outside the past 10 years,
like, yeah,
you do a movie, you do that for 2 months, and then every once in a while you got on a hit TV show, and that was the only way you had work for longer than, say, a year. So to have been around something for 3 years, that is addicting.
Like, yeah,
being on set and creating television and being in that environment.
With the same people, the team, and getting your chemistry down and having that. Yeah.
Like, it's fantastic. It's great. So I miss that every day. Like, every day I wake up and don't go anywhere. That. But at the same time, it's a workplace.
Yeah.
You know, after 3 years of going someplace, you're going to work.
Yeah. You're employed, but you're going to your job. Just
you're
like
going to your job.
People who are listening to this, maybe you're driving somewhere, you know, to your job. This is it's still a job.
Yeah.
You got to show up on time. You got to do your job. People can be rude. You have to deal with other people's personalities. Yeah. It's the reality of it. Now, when you don't have anything going on now, I know you're working on stuff and you're always auditioning. Do you have fear that you won't get back there? Or is it the same fear that you had before you got it? I mean, I'm always intrigued by that because there's a mountain everyone's climbing, right? And not many of us get to base camp one.
Yeah.
And I would say that you got to base camp one on Everest, and now you're walking, you know, you're trying to climb it more.
Yeah.
And it's getting steeper and steeper, and the altitude's getting less and less, and the breathing and all. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, all that stuff isn't, it's all coming.
Yeah. And but see, that's where I differ. I feel like me, 35 to 45, could be the best years of my life as far as acting-wise, because that's the dad, that's where a lot of success happens.
Really?
Yeah.
I like that. And I think you might be right.
That's
the better parts, the meatier parts.
Yeah, that's where I'm trying to get ready for now. I can't play John Falstaff right now, but I'll be able to play Falstaff in 8-9 years.
Yeah.
And that...
You're talking about Henry IV, right?
Henry V. Yeah. But
I love Falstaff.
That he's the best. Yeah. He's a literary giant, and that's my mindset, man. That's where it all starts.
Yeah.
So fear, I wouldn't say I'm very afraid of not being able to do it. I'm afraid of not being able to pay my rent next month.
Sure.
But those are all temporary.
And in LA, do you think like people are going to forget? Like, do you think they've forgotten that you actually worked? Okay, do you remember me? I used to work. I mean, I'm working.
I'm not afraid that they'll forget I'm work. What bums me out and the thing that, you know, can wound you is like you went and you worked with all these people for so long.
Yeah.
And you worry that they will forget. Have forgotten.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I just wanted to, you know, it'd be nice if I could have lunch with somebody from my, you know, my network of career friends mm-hmm. every day. But you just can't do that now.
Yeah.
Everybody's doing their thing. So
sure.
Watching them kind of continue on, that's the only time where I go, damn.
You know, yeah, take me sucks. For, you know, like to get along for the ride here and, yeah. and keep in that mix.
I don't even need to be in your boat. I'll just tie off. You drag me behind.
More boat. I'll cook. I'll flip the halibut on your boat.
I can cook on
them. I'll be the halibut flipper. Yeah. Do you see so the guy used to direct a lot of those episodes? Isn't he the head of the DGA as well?
Yeah, Paris.
Yeah,
he directed a bunch, and he was an executive producer. Yeah.
So you have stuff like that where, of course, you're like, damn, that's some serious connection. Now you know, I see that. That makes me want to go dirtbag Claremont. I want to go dirtbag Claremont on a lot of people because I feel like a lot of people in entertainment speak with no consequence, Barry. And people don't get checked a lot in industry when they have something going on. It's hard to check them. And when you're from dirtbag Claremont, you get checked. If you have, if you're problematic, you get checked.
Every day.
Every time someone checks you, even when you're not doing anything wrong, someone probably tries to check you.
Yeah, this town is addicted to status, and I do it. Everybody does it. It's hard to get out of it.
Yeah.
But it's also one of the unfortunate things about living here.
Before I leave you, we need to talk about something really quick that's really close to my heart, and I know you. I know you, and I know your heart, and this is close to it as well. It's the movement of the San Diego Chargers to L.A. And I am a man with no country.
Mm-hmm.
So we both grew up in San Diego. We're both colossal Charger fans. In fact, Chris is probably an even more loyal fan than I am. In fact, we were texting one day, and he was telling me that he doesn't even own the more famous player jerseys because they play for other teams, and he's a loyalist. So he only owns a Chris Dielman jersey because Dielman played for the Chargers his whole career. So,
I mean, that was the only one I bought.
He's next level fan. How are you coping? Because we're doing this show from L.A.
Yeah.
So now technically you live in the city where your Chargers are now.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel?
I'm out. Like,
you're done, right?
Yeah, I closed the lights of my football room. At the end of the Super Bowl, amazing game.
Great game.
I'm so grateful for it because,
yeah.
I didn't have a dog in the race,
mm-hmm.
and I was able just to watch a great football game
awesome.
Play out.
Yeah.
But that's it. Like, the NFL.
You're done with the NFL.
Done with the NFL.
And, okay, I wish I could be that stern like you are and say I'm done, but because my uncles and my family have been fed from the game of football, it's very hard for me to let go of the game itself. But the NFL, what you're saying and what yes. I'm saying is the NFL, they keep serving up this, we're all about the fans when you are not. You are really not about the fans because the games are not affordable. You're about your corporate suites. You're about your TV money.
Yeah.
You don't care about me and my family coming to watch a game, even though you have broken our backs
they're
to build
about
your
public subsidies.
Mm-hmm. What is your position on that? What do you think? What should have been done? Because now this goes back to, you know, just to call back what we opened up with, where San Diego, if you scrape the surface off the city, the first layer rather, you're not finding much culture there. And when you lose two professional franchises over the course of 30 years, you've lost to Clippers, now you've lost to Chargers, you become an outpost city. And you're one of the largest cities in America. You're top 10, I think.
Seventh largest city.
Seventh largest city in America.
Yes.
And now you don't have a basketball team or a football team. You have a baseball team that no one really cares about. It's more of the social experience. And then you have a minor league hockey team. I mean, you become Fort Myers. I mean, it's coming very close to that.
It's pretty absurd. And, you know, there's so many problems with San Diego as a sports city. We've talked about this. There's transplants. There's all this. But the actual problem has been the failure of ownership of either franchise to field a competitive alluring product consistently.
Mm-hmm.
The Chargers did it. They filled their stadiums for, you know, 8 years or whatever their run through the 2000s was.
Yeah.
And we know the excitement that was in the town
mm-hmm.
when that was happening. When the Chargers went to the Super Bowl,
94,
we
yep.
know the excitement that was. There is nobody who was in San Diego when the Chargers went to the Super Bowl, when the Padres went to the World Series, that can say that San Diego is not a sports city.
It is. It may be a little bandwagony, but it definitely brings
sure.
the heat. The people come out.
Yes.
They support.
When it's happening. Like, and you need to show effort, and you need to show that you are doing everything you can to win. And there is not a San Diego franchise that can say they have done that
yep.
in the past, since 1994, really. I mean...
It's mind-boggling to me how... I know you have to wrap up soon, but it's mind-boggling to me how the NFL expects us, the taxpayer, Jane and Joe taxpayer, mm-hmm. to foot their mortgage.
Yes.
It is mind-boggling.
There's no other institution that doesn't, that I can think of.
It's unreal that they expect you to not only purchase all the fantasy football, the red zone package, the tickets to go.
And then they wrap it in the flag and, you know,
say,
throw a
veteran
up. If
you don't do it, you're not American.
Yes.
They really manipulate and rape
yeah,
you.
They do. They exploit tribalist instincts that we as humans have
mm-hmm.
to for their own gain. So I'm done with it.
You're done.
I feel like you're going to stick to it.
It's over.
I'm aware of it. Yeah, I'm done. I have two ways out. I've written in two ways in my Declaration of Independence.
Yes, I think I read something you put out. It was very well put.
If they give the San Diego, the Chargers name, just let them have it. Even if a team never goes back there, I would say, okay, you gave us the
like
name.
Like the Browns.
It's ours. Yeah, it's ours. Or if they put a team in San Diego.
That You'll
is,
go back.
I would, yeah, for
you
sure.
Go back.
San Diego Raiders, silver and black. It would happen instantly.
Really?
Oh,
see,
yeah.
This is what I said, that it would be genius for the Raiders to move here, or not here, but to San Diego, because the spiteful Charger fans will jump ship and go to them.
And they've got a sizable fan
and
base
down there.
And they've
got a huge Mexican
already.
Fan base.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to a Raider game, it's 70% Raider fans.
It was 90 this time.
Well, because we're so bad this year.
That's true, and the Raiders were great.
Man. I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know. Where can we find you? Go ahead. Plug your stuff.
Chris Reed, 619, Twitter and Instagram. That's where I put all my stupid thoughts and post all my stupid pictures.
And what are you working on right now? Anything coming out or anything we can check out? Some of your sketches online, anything like that?
You know, I've got lots of cool stuff on the IMDb that you can just go on any platform online. If, like, you're curious to see me on television, I would say look at Eastbound and Down.
Mm-hmm.
That's one
Great
of my favorite things
and
ever. And just follow me on the social media. I post everything, every stupid thing that I do on there.
If you want to hear some real dirtbag Claremont stuff.
Yeah, if you want to get
into the
mind.
See the dirtbags do it. That's going to be our next show, Dirtbags of Claremont, me and him. I love you, man.
You're
family
to
me.
Ricardo.
Thank you for being on the show with the Broken Tail Dog himself, Josh Ricardo. You can follow me at Josh Ricardo, ACCARDO, on the Twitter, on the Instagram, on the Snapchat. I love you guys. Barry, I love you, man. You've done so many good things for me. This has been great. I love a chance to be on our heart and doing these special events for you. Take it easy.